Lowell, when you were growing up and first learning to play guitar in the late 30s, you were traveling around with Texas Alexander quite a bit. What was he like?
You never know what he was going to do next, you know. He was didn't talk a lot. And he and Blind Lemon Jefferson, Blind Bar Fuller, they all sung pretty close on the, we call it the working man blues back in them days, you know. People on farms, plantations and stuff, and make up songs to ease the work and stuff like that. Sing about their pain and their troubles, which from my understanding, they had a lot of them. You know, Texas was a soft-spoken, beautiful, deep voice. Yeah.
Did he record?
Yeah, he recorded for Bluebird or Belltone. I know he had one record on, I think it was RCA. Before he went to the penitentiary, he was on that label.
So that was quite something for you as a youngster then to be playing with an artist of his stature?
You know, I never did look at it like that. I just said, well, he needed a guitar player, and I was able to follow him and play what he sung, because he never did call no keys. It wasn't the same like that. You just had to find what he was doing and go and play it. But it's all right. I made more money fooling around with him than I did on one of them jobs back in them times.
What kind of work were you getting back then, playing acoustic music with him?
None but, we call them juke joints. You go in there, and if they like it, they'll cut their music off. And it was no salary. He set the kitty down, and whatever was put in there, well, he'd give me what he wanted me to have, and he'd keep the rest of it, see. It's like I said, it was more than I was making, so it was all right with me, what he made.
Lowell, how did you end up on the West Coast?
In the service. Yeah, I was a Navy man, and during a particular time, I was living in a little small town in North Texas called Gainesville. And when they drafted me, well, most all of us came out of that district that went to California. The sense of where he was needed mostly, you know. So I was in the Navy out there.
Yeah, Oakland was quite the center back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I was stationed up there. That's the reason why I got to be known pretty good so early, because I was stationed at the Alameda Naval Air Station in Oakland. And then I'd play on the street corners and stuff like that to get attention, and first thing you know, I did. And the SPs were going to put me in jail. The people wouldn't let them. They said, well, you better get them off. So I started playing house parties, you know. We came out as a butcher. And even long when I cut up enough meat that for the officers' club, well, I had liberty till Monday. So I leave Friday and come back Monday with me a couple $100.
Well, when you were in Oakland in the early 40s, did you find that the blues scene there had a pretty different sound to it than the kind that you left behind in Texas?
Yeah. It was more modern. Yeah, it was more modern type blues, you know. Might as well say lots of it was on the blues ballad because, but it was different. It wasn't the hard stuff. It was kind of smooth.
It was that kind of jump blues style.
Yeah. Horn jump section. Blues, swing. Yeah. Swing blues. That type of blues that you could fit in with big bands. It was that type of blues, you know. In the modern keys, you know, your ninths, your sixes, your diminished. Them old blues, all you got was E and A and play.
Well, you, of course, are well known as a songwriter because so many of your songs have been recorded and covered by all the great bluesmen of the 50s and 60s, 70s, 80s. And I'm wondering when you started to write, is this something that goes right back to your youth, that you started to write poetry and music?
Yeah, yeah. Make up my own songs. I didn't know nobody else's tunes too much. I make up my own, you know. And it rhymed, it worked out, and I find me a melody or something to go with it and go ahead on and sing it. Lowell, I haven't heard that song. I said, well, you're hearing it now, you know, but it was recorded back in the time.
One of your most successful songs is called Reconsider Baby, and your version was recorded in 1954. Do you remember anything about writing this song that made it special for you?
Put a lot of time in that song because what made it kind of a little difficult, I was working every night just about somewhere, traveling, you know. So I had about a week off, and I'd go to beer taverns and get me a corner, sit down and get me a beer. So I could stay away from people. I like to fish. I'd get in my car and go down to some of them where you can get in and out pretty good. Fish at night, you know, too hot to fish today. Out from Fort Worth, I had some people down there. And I stayed down there, and I restored and finished it. Took me about 6 months, looked like to me. Because I didn't want to use any words that somebody else had used 2 or 3 times, you know. And getting the melody how it should sound after you caught it was the hard thing, you know. So when I got all that down, well, I called the Chess Boys in Chicago, told them I was ready, and so they told me, well, all right, come on up here. I said, no. So I'm not coming up there. I said, I don't have nothing against your musician, but I got some fits me better down here. So Stan Lewis, he sent him the money to pay for the session. He didn't trust me for some reason. I don't know. But it didn't make me any difference. I wanted to get that on wax. I said, now you set up this one, and I want to write another one. I'm all right talking to Leonard Chester, and he said, we're going to get it right out, and it better be something good, cause me all this trouble. I said, well, don't worry about it. We start on another one. We won't only cut it.
And it was a big record for you, wasn't it?
It was a good record.
You must have had an incredible band in the 50s with both Ray Charles and Stanley Turrentine being in the band at the same time. What was Ray Charles like to work with?
Ray was a really keen. He was a good musician. Him and Turrentine stuck together pretty much because I'd always be wanting different tunes, you know, to put in the band, put in the catalog, so we didn't repeat the same thing too much, you know, because we had more music than we did singing. They didn't care too much about Ray Charles' style of singing that time, so they didn't use him as an act at first. They just used him as a side man, you know. And that was all right with Ray at the time because he was planning on something better and bigger, but he had to work up to it. He was still a teenager, and he hadn't got that far advanced to be known by that many people. He was sounding like Nat King Cole.
Right.
And I kept talking and got him out of that, and I went to the company and put him on the handbill, the advertising window, on the window cards. Put the man out there. He can sing. And, well, they did. And Ray was, he was a heck of a musician. I would talk to him, and he would braille, and then him and his turn team would get together and put it on sheet music. And I said, well, I'm going to make you the band leader. You tell him to play what I want. Good stage tunes, you know. 1 o'clock drop and stuff like that. That's what stuff we played in my band. But Ray was a genius. And you talk to him, and he, like an elephant, he never did forget nothing you said. Note for note, if I'd hum it, he'd get his braille thing, and he'd put it down. And it was a good team for close to 3 years.
And then later, of course, Ray Charles recorded a number of your compositions, and that probably helped a lot, too.
Sure. Anytime somebody can take your song and make a hit out of it, a good seller, it's a lot of help, you know.
Well, I guess one of your most successful records would be Tramp, which was covered by many people in different kinds of music, and there was many follow-ups to that, too, as well. There was a lot of records that came out after Tramp. It sort of influenced a whole style of music there for a while, I think.
Well, the trend, what helped me out on Tramp, and that's the trouble I had with it, is finding the type of music to such a few words. But I came up with that idea. And I had to wait till my ranger left, the guy that ranged Black Knights. He believed in horns. He was a horn man. He loved horns, and which I do too, but there's some songs I figured that horns didn't go in, and that was one of them. So when he went on vacation, I got me 3 or 4 pieces and went in and cut it. Boy, he was so mad when he got back and he heard that. And, you know, they wouldn't release it because they said it was bunch of crap, the Brahe Brothers, because he was a blues label. They love blues. So Tall Paul, out of Birmingham, disc jockey, and Bug Scruggs out of San Francisco, boy, jumped all over, man, get that record on the market now. But he did.
I guess you knew Percy Mayfield before his accident.
Right, yeah. Before his accident.
And both of you had that association with Ray Charles, of course.
Yeah, in the early years, and him in the later years. He was a good writer, too. Matter of fact, I think he's more of an advanced writer than I am.
How far back did you go with Percy Mayfield?
I'd been in the service, not a service, when I first met Percy. But I was in Oakland. He was there in Oakland. You know. I think during that time, he was working at a back 46, 47 He worked part-time as a presser for his uncle at a cleaner's there in West Oakland. It looked like none of the blues singles, everybody was just about on a standstill. Fuzz, something busting the market wide open, you know. So looked like he, Joe Turner, and myself all came out about the same time. Joe Turner would change your love, Percy, please send me someone to love.
Right.
And Lowell Fulson would every day I had the blues.
That's right.
And one on a hash for don't roll those bloodshot eyes at me and stuff. It looked like we all hit right along together in 1551.
So you'd all been kind of working together for many years before everybody got their breaks?
No, didn't work together until after the break.
I see.
Because the promoters didn't know enough about us to put that much money up. To be booking the one. Wouldn't might be unknown. T-Bone was known.
Yep.
Because he started back in the 40s, but who knew about Lowell Fulton Percy Mayfield until those records come out of them.
Well, I guess there weren't a lot of record companies in the Oakland area at that point either. I mean, they were in Chicago, Cincinnati, Houston, Los Angeles, but I guess it was more difficult to be discovered if you were based out of Oakland, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Well, it was Oakland didn't have but two labels there, I think, at that time, and that was Trilon and Big Town and... Los Angeles was kind of loaded with the things, Specialties and R&M and Swing Time. They had more labels than any one city, you know.
Sure.
That I know of. Los Angeles did, yeah.
Well, that must have been quite an active West Coast scene, especially with Big Joe Turner on the scene as well.
Yeah, it was. It was a lot of fun there. They used to call it the Big Three, so well, it's time to get the Big Three out, and that was Lowell Fulson, T-Bone Walker, and Big Joe Turner. And by Joe not playing no instrument, I came first on the stage, Joe came next, and T-Bone closed it out. Instead of putting the two guitar players banging heads together, you know. And which I didn't care too much about that either, because he was a powerful man on the guitar. He was tricky, too, you know. Been to the old school. He knew all the tricks. T-Bone Walker is the man that brought blues guitar back in style. In the 40s.
Boy, that must have been quite something to see you and Big Joe Turner and T-Bone Walker together.
Yeah.
Did that package tour very often, or was that for special occasions?
Once or twice a year, they would take us out. And then they would have to go to separating us, you know. They would take Bone, maybe put Bone with another package. But they kept me and Joe Turner pretty close together on the shows. And the last big one we was on was the Top 10. In 55, the top 10 artists across the country, they're taken one by one, compiled them all together. Jackie Miles Mabley was the MC of the show, and they sent it out with Bill Doggett and the Clovers, the Moon Glows, Paul Williams Band, and Lowell and Joe, the Dominoes and all that. It was all trying to get 10 of us. Ruth Brown, Faye Adams, and... a big old chartered Greyhound bus. We toured from one end of the country to the other, starting out around Washington, D.C., New York, you know, and up and then coming on down. So we gets down around Washington, and it come to Joe Turner's time, and we playing, and Joe just tore the house down. Guys couldn't hardly get on there, so just kept on going. They wouldn't speak to us at first, other guys on the show. So we gets down around Kansas City, and here come Lowell's time. I got on and had to wait a certain time to get the other acts, get the house down in order so the other acts could come on, you know. But Joe Turner didn't have no trouble. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I come on too, and he come on with his type of blues. And when we got there, I tell you who was left. Lowell, Joe, and Ruth Brown, Faye Adams, and Clovers. Rest of them is... They cut it, and the man signed back home. We had too many of them Southern states didn't know nothing about them pretty songs. I mean, they wanted some rock and roll and some blues.
How did you feel when rock and roll and Bill Haley and Elvis Presley and all those people started recording a lot of that great R&B stuff that you had been involved with in the 50s? And
I know a lot of the guys didn't like it, but I did. it put something in the music that needed to be in that, because it'd be, all the blues had been just one type of way, one type of person song. It was more than different races of people doing the blues that you was brought up with. It makes it good because it's new ideas, it's fresh ideas, and it's their way. And what is wrong with doing things your way? So I liked it. I learned from it. It improved a lot of things that I was trying to do, you know, and I couldn't go to this guy and get it. I couldn't go to him and get it. We didn't get it because we all doing the same pattern for years. It's a tradition thing all down through the years. And then you pick up on the white boys' songs and you say, wait, see, I think I can do that better, which they didn't know. They was clipping from us and we reached back and get a little something from them. You understand?
Sure.
So it improved the music, yeah.
Did some of those rock and rollers record your songs as well?
No. Nope. Not that I know of. Yeah. Nobody but Presley, he did the Reconsider Baby. You know, I didn't hear it until a couple of years ago. Never did hear it. And I never did think nothing about it. Too busy trying to get up me another big one. And then when my recording company played out, I didn't do nothing. But I would hear it through the grapevine. So fine, I did get to hear the LP. And he did a good job. Only thing I hate, they didn't put out on a single. I met him when he was in service. He played the Coliseum there in Fort, and no, he didn't play. B.B. King played. And they knew each other, and I was with B.B. as just a guest. And Presley come by to see him. He had to come, he came to the back door, you know, and then he used to open so he wouldn't panic the whole house at the place. He came in there, and we sat out there and talked a long time. And I got to meet him again. I'm playing in Houston at the ballroom there. And they was on the way to California with him to do some recording. They asked me what I think about him. I said, well, he's okay. What you mean? He said, I want you to let him do a song, Lord, and give me your opinion. You mind? I don't know. Let him get up there and sing. So he got up there and sang, and he sang one of Big Mama Thornton songs, you know, about a hound dog. And he doing his regular leg twisting, and, you know, and shimming. And I said, he's a frisky little rascal, all right, to myself. So when they got on, they took him down. And said, what do you think about him? I said, well, he's good looking and he's frisky. The gals will make him, so you don't have to worry about it. And I was right about it. You know, girls went wild over it. That's who bought the LPs. And if you buy one, I can buy one. That's the women buy the records.